Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Georgia Wrestling Now, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on the local scene in Georgia and around the Southeast region, as well as interviews with the newsmakers. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Georgia Wrestling Now.
The Undertaker may be back tonight, but we never left. This is Georgia Wrestling Now with your host from the award-winning WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, Mr. Jonathan Foote.
Rumors are abound about The Undertaker's return tonight, but did you know that Jacob Ashworth is a plumber?
I did not know that.
And apparently, if Alberto Del Rio, with his limitless funds, needs some plumbing work done, Jacob Ashworth will travel all the way to Jacksonville, Florida to do it. I'm sure the lure of SmackDown appearances doesn't hurt either.
Whatever you do. Whatever things get you there, you get there.
So that was one of several things that happened over the last few days. Did you go to any wrestling shows, Matt?
I did not. I was completely off. I feel weird.
The only one I attended was Rogue Navy's show, the PWL, the People's Wrestling League, yesterday at WWA 4.
Oh.
It was overall a good show. It smelled like a giant litter box because of where it was. But I guess That should not reflect in any way on the wrestling that occurred.
Considering where it was, a giant litter box is probably at least par for the course, if not a step up.
Yeah.
I can think of a lot of worse things that it could have felt like in that place.
Yeah, well, that was the overall permeating smell. But it was a good show. It was a fun show that saw Ethan Case and Eli Evans. Is that it? I'm sorry. Eli.
Yeah, I always want to say Daniels, and I know that's wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, worst case scenario, took on Trevor Eon and a guy named Alien, and that was one of the better matches. Bill the Butcher came out to defend, I guess you'd say, Melissa Coates, who was being harassed by a French guy named Jean-Pierre. And then Rogue Navy took on Lynn Parker in the main event. And then the main event saw a returning UHA Nation who hasn't missed a step. He's looking good, like he's definitely ready to get back into Dragon Gate and CZW and all the other promotions he was in almost a year ago when he had his injury. And I honestly would be surprised if we don't see him in Ring of Honor or even TNA or WWE in the near future.
I hope it works out. UHA has worked hard to get back, and he's always had the look, he's always had the right attitude, and he's starting to really put it together in the ring. I hope it works.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's definitely got the attitude for it. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met in the wrestling business, and backs it up with plenty of talent in the ring as well. So he took on a guy named the Black Baron, and then after the show, for whatever reason, pretty much the entire roster came out and put their finishing moves or other people's finishing moves on. First, it was just the heels, and then Navy, and then UHA came out, and it just became, I don't know what it was about. Something got into everybody, but the poor. That's the wrestling I saw.
Good they got that show moving. It had been rumored about before and didn't quite happen, but at least they got it. They got one under their belt. You can't have the second one until you have the first one.
I think this was the second one. I think they did one at WWE 4 not long after the one that we had talked about that didn't happen.
Okay.
But it's been at least a couple of months since that one happened. So I got some texts from Navy today, and it sounds like it's something he wants to keep doing. So I can never complain when there's another wrestling show to go to.
Somebody pops up and try. Somebody's got to try.
Yeah. So tonight we have, as I said last week, card subject to change. Medusa is not going to be able to call in, but I will be interviewing her later in the week, so you can check wrestlingwithpopculture.com to read that. In her place, though, we've got a man formerly known as Luke Gallows, as well as many other names, now known simply as Doc, the director of Chaos for Aces and Eights in TNA and Impact Wrestling. He's going to be at Pro Wrestling Resurrection's first weekly show in Gainesville, at a place called the Mega Mart this Friday. And I think he's doing some kind of wrestling seminar during or before the show or something, but we will find out for sure when he calls in. Before that, though, we have George South, who will be part of A Nightmare to Remember 3, the Ted Allen Memorial this Saturday. And he was involved with Georgia Championship Wrestling, World Championship Wrestling, WWF, and still is wrestling today. He also just recently released a book, and it is called "You're Not."
It's called "You Don't Work Dad, You Wrestle."
Something to that effect. Yes.
Is that it?
"You're Not a Worker Dad, You're a Wrestler." Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So I haven't read the book, unfortunately, but I'm sure he can tell us where people can find it and all that. So, what else?
I know Anarchy had a big fracas, as they tend to do, but I heard that this one turned into some sort of rumble more so than one of, you know, sort of their traditional tag team multi-man matches. So I think that was, I would imagine that was pretty interesting, especially given who was involved in that. Also, Sunday we had Rampage. I have scoured the internet to try to find things on either of those shows, but it come up dry. I think Goodman was probably away. I believe Denny says he's going to be in Tennessee last week, so he's our main pipeline for that. And seeing around, we dry up.
Yeah. Oh, there is now a Rampage Pro Wrestling report from Larry Goodman at gwhnews.com. So, neither of us were there, so anything we say would just be speculation. So I encourage you to go with that as soon as we're off the air.
I do know that Jagged Edge made his debut. I know that for a fact.
Yes, I heard about that. Well, I heard beforehand that he was going to be making his debut. I haven't heard how it went down. But knowing the Jagged Edge, I'm sure someone was severely injured or
at least he made good attempts at doing so. Yeah, that's what I hear too.
Do you even know who he faced?
Dynamite Soul, Eric Walker.
I'm sorry, Eric Walker.
Dynamite's got a he's I don't know, Rampage is bad luck for him. Every time I've been there, terrible, terrible things have happened to him, so he's got to get his head on straight down there. After what Murder One and then Corey Chavis did to him, I thought maybe he'd come, I don't know, with a bat or something the next time, but apparently he didn't learn because he got loosed up, the Jagged Edge loosed on him this time, so there's that.
Well, he used to be known for his kendo stick and PCW.
So he needs two of them now because they keep ganging up on him.
Well, we have a caller. I believe this is probably our first guest, so let's find out. You're on the air with Georgia Wrestling Now. Who is this?
Hey, guys. This is George South calling.
George, how are you tonight?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Not bad. I'm glad to be talking to you. So,
Is this Jonathan?
This is Jonathan, and Matt is also, Matt Hankins is also here with us.
Oh, great. George. Very good, guys.
So, yeah, you're going to be part of A Nightmare to Remember 3 this Saturday, the Ted Alamo.
Yes, show.
What can you tell us about that? I'm sure you have history with Ted Allen and a lot of other people on the card.
Oh, yeah, it's great. You know, this is number 3. Of course, the tribute show for Ted Allen and him, and I've been very lucky to be part of all 3 of them since the beginning, and it's just going to be a great, great time, not only to, you know, pay respect to Ted and, of course, you know, Brad Armstrong, who I was so close to, but it also gives us guys a chance to, you know, just see some of our guys and some of our friends that we hadn't seen in a while, and it's just a great time. You know, I told a lot of the fans up in the Carolinas, it's almost like going home to a big, you know, family reunion, because everybody there, we, you know, we all know each other, and it's just a great, great night, and just a great cause, you know, with all everybody coming together. So I'm really excited to have been part of the, you know, the last two, and of course this one. It's one of my favorite events of the year. I do a lot of little tribute shows and stuff throughout the year, and some, you know, conventions, but this is probably one of my favorites. Just everybody working hard and just so much work going into it, and it's going to be a great night. Great night.
Well, George, as you said, we're 3 years into the tributes to Ted Allen, and you know, each year it seems to be the exact same excitement level here in the area. Everybody's excited about this show. This is kind of our WrestleMania, if you will, you know, because everybody's up for it. You know, people adjust their schedules around it. Did you think when you did the first one that even, you know, 2 years later when you're talking about doing the third one, everybody would still be this excited to come pay their tribute to Ted?
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. You know, and I tell Terry, I tell all the guys that's involved with this and all the time is, you know, we all get excited, maybe the first one or the second one. I think, you know, the Brian Pillman Cup that they've done for so many years. And I know things happen and they stop doing them. And it just always breaks my heart, you know, and that's why I'm so excited. Believe me, I know how much work goes into this event coming up on Saturday, you know. And I'm so glad that it's still going on. The excitement is still there. And that's what I'm so thankful for. I was part of some of those shows. I do an Anderson Brother Classic sometimes, or maybe a Wahoo McDaniel tribute, and I do it just to keep those names alive, and I know that's why a lot of these guys are doing it. I mean, nobody will ever forget Ted Allen if you've met him. I mean, the very first wrestling ring I ever bought 35 years ago was from Ted, and that's how long me and him go back, from Georgia Championship Wrestling days. In the early 80s is when the first time I ever met Ted. And we've been friends forever. And that's what was so exciting. I mean, even for me to go, I mean, you're always meeting somebody that you haven't heard from in a while. And when I know it's going to work is when the wrestlers are just as excited as the fans. If not one fan came Saturday night, all those wrestlers would still be there to pay tribute to Ted. And that's what's so exciting about this. And I love it. I mean, I just, you know, I mean, we finished up number 2 last year. I was already trying to find a date when number 3 was going to be so I could go ahead and pencil it in. So, and I love that. I know this thing is going to continue. I know a lot of the fans just come and they think a ring gets set up and, you know, you sell out a tribute show. But I know what goes into just putting this thing together, getting everybody, you know, where they need to be, and just make, you know, just, I tell folks all the time, guys, just because you've got a sold-out building don't mean it's a good show. It don't. And this here, there's a lot of just personal feelings. There's a lot of people that just, everybody has a great story, you know, about Ted. You know, 2 weeks, probably maybe 3 weeks before Ted passed away, we did the big Charlotte Fan Fest in Charlotte, and I had just spoke with him there, you know, and we had laughed and just had some great, great stories and just neat, neat things and with my memories with Ted. And I'm just so glad it continues every year. And as long as I know those guys down there and I've got something to do with it, we'll just keep this thing going.
Well,
because it's just such an honor to a great man. And like I said, this year I think Bill Drummo, we're going to just, you know, recognize Bill Drummo, who's a tremendous friend, and of course Brad Armstrong. And there's going to be, I mean, if a wrestling fan don't get theirs, you don't want to say money's worth, but if they don't get their feel of what pro wrestling is based on and the friendships and stuff, I mean, you saw this card. You know, this card is loaded. And the matches, I mean, you about got to do every match, a six-man or an eight-man. There's so many pro wrestlers that want to be part of this. Even if I wasn't working on the show, I'd be there just to, you know, just because of the respect. And believe me, I joked with the guys, you could about do this as a week-long deal. And I'm not exaggerating.
That's true.
Well, you know that? And you could, I believe it. And you could actually probably have a different wrestling card each night. There are so many people that want to be part of this. And it's just a special, special time. I like where it's at. You know, I like just the school. I just like that atmosphere. And, you know, I get there. Last year, everybody laughed at me because I got there at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And the building wasn't even open yet. And, I mean, it's just you. But you can, when you pull up in that parking lot, you start getting goosebumps. I do. And I've been doing this stuff almost 40 years. So I can imagine the fans when they start coming in. You know, last year, number two, I met, as many times as I talked to that sweet lady on the phone, I met Ted Allen's mother for the first time at this the Ted Allen number two. And I was excited because I've always talked to her on the phone. But getting to meet her was still so exciting for me to finally, you know, get to put a face with that name. So it's just going to be a great, great time. I would not miss it for anything in the world.
Do you know yet who you will be facing?
Well, they've actually, it's going to be me. I think it's like a mixed tag. They've got me, I think Bo James and his wife, Misty, who's just a sweet, sweet girl and a great, great, you know, great worker. And we're going to be in like a little mixed tag, which I'm looking very forward to that. So, and of course, I spend as much time in the dressing room. You know, what's so funny is I've been doing this 40 years, and I'm getting my picture made with everybody, you know, in the dressing room. And that's what this thing, and I know, you know, that's what would make Ted feel so happy is when he sees all of his friends come together. I mean, I met many, many years as we've both been in the business. I met Mr. Olympia Jerry Stubbs last year. And as someone that always wanted to meet him, but we just never crossed paths, you know, we worked different territories. And so I got to meet him last year. For me, that was exciting. I got my picture made with him. I just thought that was pretty excited. So I know how I feel about it, and I can imagine how the wrestling fans, and there's something there for everybody. You got the new guys, you got the old school guys, you got legends, you got guys that are just starting out. So there's something there for everybody.
You mentioned your relationship with Brad Armstrong, and I've been reading about a match that you two had not too terribly long ago that everybody just said was so special, and it felt like it was really just this clinic on what old school wrestling was and should be. Did you realize it was that special when y'all were into it, or was it just one of those things you were in there with your buddy just having fun?
Yeah, and you know, it's like what Ric Flair wrote about him and Ricky Steamboat is some of their best matches was not in a coliseum. It was in a little old high school gym somewhere, and you know, there was no video cameras or anything like that. And that's kind of how I felt about this one with Brad. Of course, we got it on videotape, and a good friend of mine, Dick Bourne, actually put it to a music video. Every time I got in a ring with Brad, I just always wanted it to be special for him. Now, he could work with a broomstick. I mean, he was just unbelievable. And I just always wanted to go out there with him and just make it very special. And that night, man, it don't happen often, but some nights it just everything just clicks. And it was the old Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where, you know, NWA Mid-Atlantic had been all those years. And we actually had Ricky Steamboat and Bill Eadie, the Masked Superstar, some of those guys watching the match. So it was probably, and I've done, you know, pretty good bit in this business, but it was probably one of my all-time favorite moments. Just to have him, had referee Tommy Young of the NWA part of it. So very, very special. And fans still, come up to me and they talk about, you know, talk about that match right there. So I know it blessed a lot of people. I told Brad's wife, Lori, a couple weeks ago that was probably the greatest compliment I can get is Lori would always tell me when all of Brad's brothers would come up to visit, he would always pull out that video. I sent him a copy of that video of that match. And it was put to like a Creed video music. And his wife used to joke with me and say, George, if I hear Creed again, I'm going to kill somebody. Because Brad would, Lori said, if somebody come over to buy milk, Brad would show them that video. So I knew it was real special to him, and that was probably one of my greatest moments. He was just such a tremendous, you know, in pro wrestling, when we've all lost, you know, friends and loved ones, and you almost get immune to it. We've had so many deaths, but this one with Brad, I mean, it hurt. I mean, I was just driving down the road. I've shared with people, and one of my guys texted me and said, just please tell me that Brad's okay. And naturally, I thought Brad Anderson, who lives up here, Gene Anderson's son, lives up here in Charlotte. But they just let me know that they had heard that Brad Armstrong passed away. And, guys, I tell you, buddy, I'm like to think I'm a strong man, but I had to pull over. And, of course, just, you know, you hear so much stuff, and you weren't sure if it happened. And then when I finally heard for sure, it just broke my heart. I mean, one of the greatest, you know, just good guys. I mean, there's a lot of good guys in wrestling, but Brad was just good. I mean, he was just one of the most unbelievable talents. We always joke that you would keep Brad Armstrong in the dressing room even if he couldn't work, because he always laughed, you know, and just always made everybody feel so good around him. And I miss him to this day. I'm so excited about seeing, you know, Bullet, his dad's going to be there. And, you know, when I had the privilege of speaking at Brad's funeral, first thing I said was, I always wanted to be an Armstrong. You know, because all them boys could work. You know, I told Brad's mother down there at the funeral, I said, I don't know what you put in their bathwater, but whatever it was, I said, every one of them boys can work. So I could talk for hours on him, and I just, man, he just meant so much to me, and just unbelievable talent in the ring. I don't think, you know, we always say, you know, he never had a bad match, but I don't think that he, Brad Armstrong, or Ted, really, as a matter of fact, had a bad match with anybody. So just great, great friends, and I would miss it for the world.
As you kind of moved along, you know, in your career, when you got to the bigger stages, you know, you worked with a lot of great talent, but you necessarily didn't get the wins or didn't get the pushes. Did that ever get hard on you, or was it just back then that was part of business that you understood what you were doing and you knew your job?
Well, you know, with me, it was always to earn the respect of the guys I looked up to was more important to me than money. And I've instilled that in not only my trainees, but my son is, you know, I always joke with him that if you learn to work and you learn this business, nobody can ever take it from you. And I know we all, you know, you want paid, you got to make money, you got to pay your bills and support your family. But, you know, it don't happen much, like I said, but I can still sometimes just get in there and, you know, it's like Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. If they could come back and work one more match, I bet they'd do it for free. There's just that respect thing that there's no amount of money that, and that's how I felt about Ted and about Brad Armstrong. And I joke that, you know, I probably in 40 years only won like 5 matches, you know, but the secret was to keep a job. And I just enjoyed going out there with guys. That Ted Allen Memorial number 2, one of the Ding Dongs, I know the wrestling fans remember the Ding Dongs. Well, one of the Ding Dongs, Greg Evans, was there that night. And I have not seen him in 20 years. And, of course, me and, you know, I had their debut match back in the day. They only was around a short time. But even that connection of putting the Ding Dongs over. Now, that's why I laugh. When I hear guys that won't do jobs on TV or they won't do jobs for somebody, I laugh. Because, I mean, I'm thinking, what are you embarrassed about? I mean, I put the monkeys over and I put the Ding Dongs over, you know? So what have you got to complain about, buddy? So kind of puts everything in perspective. But, no, I've I just love this business. It's the greatest business in the world, and I've been blessed to still be able to do it. And to me, to go out there with Ted Allen or Brad Armstrong and go 30 minutes and just have people, you know, on the edge of their seat, man, you can't put a price tag, you know, on something like that. And that's – so the win-losses and all that, you know, and I, to this day, people say, man, you never won a match. And I kind of laugh and you know, a lot – you know, but to have the respect of Ric Flair, I mean, you know, when Ric Flair wrote his book, he wrote a little bit about me, and even with my own book, my guys joke with me that the first 20 pages are just forewords from all these legends. Because, you know, they said, you ought to do a book on just forewords. But I just had, you know, a lot of great guys. Ted DiBiase, I always wanted to impress, not really impress, but I wanted those guys that I looked up to think that maybe George South knew a little bit of what he was doing. And that's what's meant more to me than any of the money, just to be able to go out there and have a decent little match. And, you know, Terry Taylor watched one of my matches the other day, who I just love Terry Taylor to death. And he just, you know, it's just neat to have that respect. And, you know, a lot of these outlaw guys that are in this business now, they'll never have that. And a lot of it's by choice. They just never wanted to learn. And there's more to our business than just, you know, hitting somebody over the head with a light bulb. There's a lot more to it than that. And, you know, that match of me and Brad's we just talked about, man, when you go out there and it's just two people on the same page and, man, they're dancing to the same song, it's the most beautiful thing in the world, guys. I'm just telling you. And you don't get to do it much because there ain't many of us around. But, buddy, when it works, it's the greatest thing in the world.
George, you seem like you're full of stories, so I'm guessing coming up with your book wasn't all that difficult for you.
Well, you know what's funny is everybody wants to write a book, and I'm like all the boys. I've always made notes, you know, on napkins and popcorn boxes and just never thought I'd have time, you know. But I'd met Mark James, who had done Bill Dundee's book, and I just met him at a convention. And he said, man, George, I know you – got enough stories to write a book, and I just kind of blowed him off. I mean, I'm thinking, I ain't got time to write no book. I ain't got time to finish it. And, buddy, he just worked his magic. I mean, what was funny is I gave him over 600 pages, and he looked at me like, that's crazy. You know, and he said, man, this thing will break the coffee table. But it's a scary thing to just give your life story to somebody, and they say, trust me. And that's a scary thing. But I'm so happy with what he did. I gave him 400 pictures. And he just took his time and just put, you know, because you don't want to leave nothing out. I've met so many wonderful guys in pro wrestling. I didn't want to leave anybody out. My thank yous in my book is like 10 pages. So between the forwards and the thank yous, it's a pretty big book. But I just had a lot of great things, a lot of great stories, and Mark James just did me such a blessing. I thank him every day. And the greatest reason I devoted a whole chapter in my book to the Armstrong family. And I'm probably one of the, if not the only guy, I've worked every one of them Armstrongs. I mean, from Scott to Bullitt, I've been beat up by every one of them. And what's neat is I gave them, you know, I was able to get Brad a copy of my book. And his wife told me that he kept it, you know, beside his recliner. And he just... man, he would show everybody that book and was so proud of it. And, you know, those things like that, I'm so glad I finished it. If no other reason, just that Brad got to see how much he meant to me in that book. So it's doing real good. I joke with everybody that it's the second greatest book ever written. Of course, you know, a guy told me last week, he said, man, Ric Flair's book is pretty good. I said, no, you missed it. But it's doing real, real good. Thank you, guys. And, I mean, we do. I just try to, you know, it's got a good little story, my whole relationship with, the Lord and how he just changed my life years ago. And, you know, most people think that you can't be a Christian and be a pro wrestler. And I've said this for 30 years. I just go do it. And, you know, I'm not perfect by no means. I screw up every day. But, man, I would not trade in my career for nothing. I've met some great, great friends and, you know, my stories with Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert and Eddie Guerrero and all those great guys that are no longer with us. You know, man, I love those guys. Oh, my gosh. And I'm just able now with my little training school to pass that on to some of these newer guys. And, you know, I had heard a story last week down in WWE at their training camp that every now and then one of the agents will just ask those trainers, I mean the students. There's like, you know, maybe 100 guys down there, but they'll just ask them, do you know who Paul Jones is? Do you know who, you know, Scott Irwin is or somebody like that? And you'd be amazed, guys, how this newer generation has never heard of these guys. And, you know, and it's really sad. Just real sad. And it's up to a lot of the guys. You know, and it makes me mad because with the Internet and how strong the Internet is and stuff like that, they could do some research and find out about these guys. And so that stuff, part like that, that's one reason I just try to keep it alive. You know, because the Wrestling Twos and the Tim Woodses and guys like that, Ole Gene Anderson and all those guys, especially around the Georgia area, just paved the way for everything that's going on now. And that's why I was excited. Like, what was it? We just heard that Bruno Sammartini is going to be in the WWF Hall of Fame or whatever. But, I mean, I wasn't excited about the Hall of Fame as much as I was. I just like Bruno being around wrestling, you know. And that's what I told a lady. You know, she says, Ric Flair needs to retire. I said, lady, what do you think Ric Flair should be doing then? I mean, you know, I mean, Ric Flair should be around wrestling. And that's the part I love about it, that Bruno's back associated with pro wrestling. And I think he should be.
Well, George, it sounds like you always took the time to enjoy the moment you were in. You kept such great, you recall it so well that you had to be thinking with some foresight of, hey, this might not be here tomorrow. Was that always
right,
the case, or something that kind of hit you?
No, you know, I got started. I graduated high school on a Friday, and they threw me in the ring on a Saturday. And I wished if I could go back, I would have slowed down and just enjoyed. You know, when you first get in the business, I mean, my third week in the business, they put me in the ring with the original Sheik. And, I mean, the original Sheik is stabbing me with a pencil, you know. And at the time, I'm thinking, what's this old guy doing, you know? But now that I look back and just realize how, you know, man, appreciative. I was appreciative then. It's just, but you want everything so fast. And, you know, you want to go to that next level before you know it. I mean, I was around, one of my biggest regrets is being around Andre the Giant and never getting a picture with him. And, I mean, you just see him a lot and you think you'll just get the picture later. And then you realize that, you know, he's not around. So there's still a few things I wished I could have done different, a bunch of things, actually. But I would have slowed down. That's what I tell these young kids. Just slow down a little bit and enjoy it. And enjoy every moment of it. And that's what I would have done. I mean, I was around Ron Starr and Ron Ritchie and, you know, just those early Georgia Championship Wrestling days. And just unbelievable. Bob Roop. And I still talk to Bob Roop now. We laugh. I mean, then I was just a young, snot-nosed kid that thought he knew everything. And Chick Donovan was a tremendous help to me when I first started and really, really took up for me. And just so those guys, whenever I get a chance to see them, I still thank them to this day. And that's the part that it does end very quick. I mean, I've been doing this stuff 36 years, and it just seems like yesterday. You know, I used to try to get booked in Georgia Championship Wrestling. And back then, you know, you just didn't, you know, go join a training camp and go to wrestling. I mean, they didn't want you in the business to begin with. The old-timers didn't. And, man, I called Atlanta one time, the booking office, and Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer answered. And it scared the crap out of me. Yeah. Man, I hung the phone up, and I thought, I ain't never calling back. And, I mean, just that, and, you know, in anticipation of just wanting to be on there. And I was actually living in Charlotte and working for Georgia Championship Wrestling, driving down to Atlanta every day. And, of course, Mike Jackson, who's a tremendous friend. If it hadn't been for Mike Jackson, I wrote about it in the book. Mike Jackson got me my first break in Georgia Championship Wrestling. And if it hadn't been for Mike Jackson, I mean, I went everywhere with him. I was doing TV in Atlanta on a Monday, TV, you know, in Shreveport for Bill Watts on a Tuesday, going to Florida on a Thursday, for TV, for Championship Wrestling from Florida. So, man, I miss those days. Oh, gosh, I miss them. And the great thing about those days is, man, from the first match to the main event, everybody knew what they were doing. Everybody could work, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess you'll get to relive that to some extent this Saturday.
That's right.
And for people interested in buying tickets to A Nightmare to Remember 3, you can go to LN Promotions, L as in Larry, N as in Nancy, promotions.com. And George South is just one of many people who will be there. So, George, I want to thank you for calling, and good luck this Saturday. And hopefully I'll get a chance to check out your book sometime soon.
Well, guys, I appreciate it. If anybody, you know, autograph pictures or anything, I got a little georgesouth.com, a great website. And, I tell people all the time, you know, I don't have – everybody says, well, if I write you, I'm going to get you people. I said, man, I ain't got people. I said, it comes straight to me, and I'll be glad to give them an autograph or something like that. So just a great career, and I appreciate y'all guys letting me be on tonight.
All right. Well, we appreciate you calling.
Thank you, buddy, and I'll see everybody Saturday night, okay? Thank you.
Right.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we will be talking to Impact Wrestling, TNA star of Aces and Eights, the director of Chaos, Doc, also known as Luke Gallows. So we will be back in just a moment.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Welcome back to Georgia Wrestling Now. This is Jonathan Williams of WrestlingWithPopCulture.com with Matt Hankins from Team All You Can Eat. And we are now being joined by Aces and Eights own Director of Chaos, Doc, from Impact Wrestling. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. I guess, first of all, I'm curious, what do you prefer to be called these days? Luke Gallows, Doc, Director of Chaos?
Doc works for me. I think that's the most current and the most fitting, so we'll keep it there.
All right. Well, Doc, you are going to be part of Pro Wrestling Resurrection's first weekly show in Gainesville this Friday, and I understand, are you doing a seminar or something there as well?
Yeah, we have a seminar that I'll be hosting starting at 3 p.m. For for any trained wrestlers in the business. Doesn't matter your skill level, come on out. And I've been fortunate enough to learn from some of the very best, from Arn Anderson, Fit Finley, Al Snow, on down the line. So I love to pass on the knowledge and stuff that I've learned from some of those great stars. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of the great young talent this Friday.
Well, I remember the first time I remember seeing you was when you were still working for Deep South Wrestling as part of WWE Developmental. So I'm guessing Bill DeMott had some hand in your training as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I came there at the ripe old age of 21. I'd been doing independence for 3 years prior to that, but I wouldn't say that I got finished or polished at all until I came to Deep South. So, yeah, Bill DeMott, Dave Taylor, the late Brad Armstrong, God rest his soul, all came through there and trained us and helped us out. So, like I said, I've had a lot of really good people that I've had the opportunity to learn from and soak up their knowledge and stuff. And I love passing along the stuff that I've got to learn from those guys and my own experiences as well.
Yeah, I would guess your affiliation with the Straight Edge Society and CM Punk and now with Aces and Eights and all the few faces we have seen revealed from that group, you're probably still learning quite a bit from Devon and people like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting to that point now. This is my 11th year, but I'm still 29 years old, so there's a lot more to learn. And as I get more and more seasoned myself, so I feel like I'm in a good position right now. Hopefully getting closer to that young veteran kind of status and stuff like a lot of guys that I watched growing up. So, yeah, I got a lot of good people around me, that's for sure.
You certainly kept busy no matter, you know, what main place you were working or where you might have been. What was the longest time kind of out of action?
What was it? I'm sorry, I have trouble hearing.
Was there ever a period where you just were not doing anything?
No, never. like I said, I did consistent independence until I got signed by WWE, and then when I got released in November of 2010, I wrestled the next day and went to Japan the next week. And in the year and a half between WWE and TNA, I visited 14 different countries independently and then kept a full independent schedule. So I've been a full-time professional wrestler my basically all my adult life, which I've been very fortunate to do so, but there's nothing that I love to do more than to wrestle and to entertain people. So, yeah, I've been lucky as far as all that goes.
Are you wrestling on Friday as well or just doing the seminar?
No, I'm wrestling. I'll be wrestling Friday. I'm in the main event against Rick Michaels, who I know is a standout Southeastern veteran and stuff like that, and I've seen his work, so I'm looking forward to getting in there and mixing it up with him. I got a full independent weekend, then I'll be heading to Birmingham for Mike Jackson on Saturday. So, yeah, I don't have TNA shows this weekend, but I'll be doing some independents. And like I said, I like to stay busy, so I'll always be wrestling somewhere.
Well, given you came into TNA around the time that a lot of big changes started to happen there, positive changes, I would say, and it seems like between the gut check thing that they do and the they're taking Impact live on the road and scaling back on pay-per-views and all those kind of things, what do you think of all that? What do you think that means for TNA in the future, and do you think it'll ever be something that actually is a legitimate competitor for WWE?
I think that it's probably on course better now than it's ever been. I think that with the business model changing the way it has, I think that we're offering a good alternative now to the WWE product. And like everything you said, I think is a positive. I like the gut check thing. I think that Impact Live on the road is huge because just since being there in July, you know, the fans in Orlando, they see it all the time. I see it every week. So I think that they get spoiled to a degree, to the point where sometimes the reaction to different things are going to be much better out on the road and live in the arenas, as opposed to they're in the Impact Zone. I mean, you can see that on the TVs that have aired the past 2 weeks, and it'll air the next next Thursday from the UK. It's just how alive those people were, and how excited they are to see pro wrestling. And any time that you have a crowd that's enthusiastic to see you perform as you are to perform, I think that it's a recipe for success all the way around, and I think that we're just going to continue to get better and better.
You were kind of going to some of those countries where maybe you've been there for the first time. Were you received very well? Did they know much of your history? Or was it just kind of like they were just ready to see pro wrestling?
It depended on the countries, to be honest with you. Like, you know, when I was in Africa, I think they were just amazed to see big white men fighting each other. that was crazy for me too, because it was scary and it was challenging, but it was, God, what a cool feeling that it was. But then, you know, like when I went to Australia and places where, you know, I'd been with WWE, you know, they knew who I was. And, of course, with as hot as Punk has been getting in the past couple of years, that helped me, too, going independently, because I had the rub coming in as being part of that faction and stuff like that. So I think that made it a little easier for me than some people who might not have had it. I'd compare it to, like, seeing guys, like I saw a good friend of mine, Gangrel, over the weekend at an independent show, and I'd compare it to someone like that, because I think that the guys who have a gimmick always, people remember them a little more and they stand out a little more, and I think that the rub I got from Punk helped me in some of those places, you know, like some of the gimmick guys get helped out. But like, you know, going to Japan for the first time independently outside of WWE was a big thing for me too, because you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to do growing up, because I would, you know, watch all these old tapes of Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody, and I wanted to go do that. So getting to go to Japan and experience that and not be, you know, Luke Gallows per se or Doc or whatever, that was really cool.
And the experience you had with Cliff Compton in Africa has become the stuff of legend. But was it, when you were in it, did it seem as crazy as sort of when the story got told when you got back? Or was it kind of par for the course for some of those places where, like you said, you were just kind of away from home and not knowing what was going on?
Well, you know, the thing about that story is I had been there four other times. I originally got brokered into this deal, like, shortly after I was released. And there was a guy out of New York named Mr. Haiti who wrestled for the WWWF. And he was kind of the liaison for American talent. And these guys had gone online and watched YouTube and seen Festus, and they wanted Festus to come there. So I was going and doing these shows and working with this Tyler Udi, who, you know, we've all heard the story a bunch of times now. But I was doing that, and then finally Mr. Haiti was getting up there in his years and stuff, and he had the desire to go back and forth to Nigeria, so he was going to kind of pass the torch to me, and I was going to book these shows. And Micah Taylor, another Georgia guy, brought him along with me and Cliff Compton. And once I got there and Mr. Haiti was gone, things kind of fell apart. And I realized I didn't know enough about talent relations on that side of the world as maybe that I needed to. But, yeah, it was – I never feared for my life. Maybe I should have. Not until that day that I had guns pointed in my face or whatever. But, yeah, it was definitely the craziest thing that I've ever seen. But I always say when you look at, like, you know, when you read these books that, you know, these veteran guys of yesteryear have written and things like that, and everybody's got their wrestling hell tour story and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a, I don't know, like a badge of honor on my vest or something like that. But that's my, that was my hell tour right there. So I got that under my belt anyway.
As you talked about, you know, wanting to go to Japan, you were prepared for the crowd and how different it is than, you know, a normal American crowd. But even being prepared for it, when you get in front of it for the first time, is it still a little off-putting just the way they react to things so differently?
Yeah, I remember the first match I had in Tokyo. And I was excited because I felt like it was going really well. And we did something, and there was a big bump, and there was just no reaction. And I was like, oh, my God, do I not know how to do this at this level anymore? You know, it was really weird. But then, you know, you get used to it and work out the kinks and stuff, and you realize that's just kind of how they are. And then later on, when I switched and I started working for Pro Wrestling NOAH, and they wanted me to be just a gaijin monster, and I'd come through the crowd and throw
guardrails and do all that kind of stuff. And it was like, you know, that's what's so special about Japan is that they respect us the way that they do. And like I was getting that, you know, Godzilla kind of reception. It was really, really cool. It's something that, you know, I'll always cherish that memory, and I hope to go back there someday and do it again because I really, really enjoyed that. You know, all of it, just being on the bus and touring the country and seeing everything and being, you know, one of two Americans on a bus full of Japanese guys and stuff. I mean, I felt really, really blessed to get the opportunity to go do that because that was definitely on my pro wrestling bucket list. Just like, you know, going to Puerto Rico for the first time outside of WWE. These are all things that being so young and getting signed, I was lucky to do that, but I didn't experience things in the order that a lot of young up-and-coming wrestlers get to do. I went straight from the independents to the WWE, so I didn't do Puerto Rico, Mexico, Japan, all the places that I tell young guys, hey, you should send your stuff here and go when they ask. I never got to do any of that, so I kind of did it in a reverse order. So all that was so cool for me to get to go and be like, okay, now I'm working for Carlos Colon. Okay, now I'm in Mexico. Okay, now I'm in Japan on the bus. That was all stuff that I really appreciated, I think, even more than some guys who start out and just get to go and do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, in ring and all those places, did you have to adapt to maybe a little more of the style that the people were accustomed to seeing, or were you able to just be you?
I think that's where I learned to be me more than maybe I knew, like in the WWE where I was kind of told how to be, because I realized, like, you know, I can't do lucha in Mexico, and, you know, I don't have 70 false finishes in Japan, so big bruiser, grunt kind of, you know, full steam ahead kind of guy, so I kind of did that, and that worked better for me than when I would first go and try to adapt. I realized that being me was my best bet, and I think that that helped me grow as a performer, you know.
How does go into these countries as an independent compare to when you did Ring Ka King or when you go there with WWE or TNA?
It felt like the Wild West because a lot of times it would just be me or me and somebody that I suckered into coming along for the experience, you know, because I usually have, you know, I've brokered all my own deals, you know, and really learned how to do that. And a couple of other guys I've helped out too. And, you know, it was just a lot different because you know that you're going to be taken care of when you go with one of these companies. Well, with WWE or the TNA tour we just did in Europe, which was great. Ring Ka King was a first-class production. A lot of fun. But on a lot of these things, it was different because it would be like, you know, getting booked for an independent show you've never worked before, but instead of being, you know, in Gainesville, Georgia, it was in the middle of, you know, West Africa or something. But it helped me, too, because then I learned, you know, when I started getting into the promoting side of things and stuff. Like I sold a tour in South America. Well, not a tour, but just 2 days. But we went to Guyana and I took like 14 other American wrestlers, you know, WWE, former WWE and TNA people. And I knew how to negotiate everything and get what they needed because I've had so many experiences where I didn't have what I needed. So it helped me learn kind of all facets of our business, which I think helps you in the long run for somebody who wants to stay in it, you know, for a career like I do, you know.
Right.
Was you doing it on your own? Was that more out of necessity, or did you go in with the mindset to, you know, I trust me, so I'll take care of me?
I think I went in with the – I think it was a little bit of both because, you know, I got let go by WWE, and I was a month shy of my 27th birthday, and I was like, I am far from done. I don't ever want to have a real job, and I want to make a go at this, and I'm not going to call WWE back. So here I go. So I kind of was like, it's time to figure out how to do all this and do it right. It's sink or swim. And luckily, through failures and eventually accomplishments, it all worked out. And I had a good year and a half, you know, a prosperous year and a half doing that. And then I was lucky enough to get the TNA deal. So it was a lot of both. But I had a lot of confidence in myself at that point because I had gone from being like a mainstream player in WWE to being, you know, in the dark match against the FCW guys. And I felt like I was really underutilized. So I think the chip on my shoulder coming out of there was the absolute best thing for me, because I wanted to stick it up everybody's butt, kind of, that, you know, I was still a big-time player with a lot of potential and a lot more to offer. And hopefully, you know, I still am, because I still feel that way. So.
Before you were revealed as a member of Aces and Eights, you were back here in Georgia at Rampage Pro Wrestling, where you defeated Kyle Matthews for the heavyweight title there, and had a couple months as champion there. What was that experience like, and what was it like, you know, being a champion there and then getting the TNA deal?
I like coming back and doing these Georgia independents. I started in West Virginia, so I would go north and go, you know, Pennsylvania, New York, or I would go south, but usually North Carolina, South Carolina. I never made it to Georgia, so I'd never worked a Georgia independent until, again, this period when I was out of WWE. So I got to really see the crop of talent that is here in Georgia. And, I mean, gosh, you guys know, because you cover it all the time. It's very impressive. And, you know, when I first saw Kyle Matthews, I didn't know how that would be, but I watched that match back some time ago on YouTube, and I really enjoyed it. I think he's a hell of a performer, and I really enjoyed working with all of those guys at Rampage, and I think that that's one of the places that does it right. And there are several around here that I think that do, and there's a lot of talent here that has the potential to go, you know, as far as they want to go. So,
is there any one piece of advice you would give to those guys who, like Kyle, who are extremely talented and just need something to kind of break through? Is there anything that you learned along the way that you think would help them?
I mean, that's such a tough question, because everybody's case specific. And I remember saying this to Kyle, because I believe it. The way that wrestling is now, there are so many people who want to tell you no, but somebody told me a long time ago that no is not a question, or no is not an answer, it's just another question. And for Kyle, you know, people may say, we'll get bigger, we'll do this, do that, or any number of these guys. But it's just a case of figuring out, you know, what's it going to take to make them say yes? If you do say yes, he's going to succeed. So, I told him, what about coming up with some kind of a gimmick, some kind of a mask or something, just to get your face in the door and get in front of them people for them to say yes. And then once you're there, because we know that once he got there, he would do well. You know, and they can say gain 20 pounds, and he can gain 20 pounds or whatever. But I feel like there are a lot of guys independently here in Georgia and in the other places that I go that are right there on the cusp of that. And I think that the way that the business is going now, that it's finally to the point where, you know, with WWE, they've told so many people no, and they hired so many guys who were models or football players, and they didn't have the passion to do this, and they whatever, that now they're in a bind to where they have to start hiring some guys to go out there and work. And I think that can do nothing but help these guys, like the Kyle Matthews or any number of other people like that. And I really hope that we start to see more of that, you know, in the future in the big leagues of pro wrestling, because, you know, that always irritated me. I remember being in Deep South one time, and I won't name the guy, but, you know, I'm a lifelong wrestling fan growing up. And we were watching a tag match, and the Hart Foundation was in the ring. And this was a guy they found at some, you know, football combine or something like that. And he walks in the room, and Bret Hart tagged Jim Neidhart, and he goes, I never knew Tank Abbott was in the WWF. And I was just like, you have a contract with the WWE, and you don't know who Jim Neidhart is. And that's ridiculous, you know, and that just went to show that the business was looking in the wrong place to find its talent, you know, and I think that hopefully now that's going to start to correct itself a little bit. I hope so, anyway.
Well, I guess that's part of your contribution will be the seminar on Friday, huh?
Well, you know, I hope so. I hope so, because I enjoy doing those things. It's not stuff that I know, but it's stuff that people who are better than me have taught me that I like to pass along, so. And I usually end up ribbing myself on those things instead of just standing outside and telling guys what to do. I'm in there wrestling with them the entire time anyway. So.
All right. Well, that's at 3 p.m. on Friday, you said?
Yeah, and bell time is 7 o'clock. Main event will be the DOC versus Rick Michaels Pro Wrestling Resurrections debut weekly show. in Gainesville, Georgia. So please come out, support the cause, see me. I'll be there. I'll be accessible. Autographs, pictures, whatever you want to do.
All right. And will you be anywhere else locally? You mentioned Birmingham, I think, Saturday, you said?
Birmingham on Saturday, and then I don't have my book in front of me. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm guessing you're back at the Impact Zone on Thursday.
No, we're actually...
Or next week, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are tapes, so... Yeah, I should have been more prepared and had my book, but I just don't. But I will have some stuff coming up here. I know that February 23rd and 24th we'll be in Thomaston, Georgia, and then Albany, Georgia, doing some independence. And, that's all I can think of right now. But I appreciate you guys having me on, and please come out and support the cause this Friday night.
All right. Well, we appreciate you calling, and I'm definitely going to try to make it up there Friday. Maybe
right,
not for the seminar, but for the show at least.
Okay, cool. You guys have a good one.
All right, you too.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, well, I guess that concludes another edition of Georgia Wrestling Now. Next week, I don't have anybody confirmed yet, but I'm sure we'll find a couple of people to call in. Any suggestions, Matt?
I got nothing. Let's get some wrestlers.
I'm trying to get Fred Yehi, but his schedule Monday nights typically is not good. So we're still working on that. But we will be back here next Monday at 7 p.m., and we will have some interesting wrestling to talk about. Until then, there's plenty this weekend. We mentioned a lot of it. There's Monster Jam at the Georgia Dome, where Medusa and other former pro wrestlers drive monster trucks now. There is PCW on Saturday at an early start time of, I believe, 4 p.m.
I believe they'll be starting the tournament.
That's right. So that'll be the first show.
Lead-in. Perfect appetizer for the Nightmare tribute. I can guarantee you can make the show. You can go to both.
Well,
I know from personal experience.
What else? Is there a Rampage on Sunday? Is that?
No, they were at last go round.
I'm looking at GWHnews.com, and it says Rampage on the 17th.
Okay,
but
I think they altered because of the Super Bowl, so they might be running another one to get caught back up.
All right. Well, anyway, for other shows, go to GWHnews.com. And like I said before, Medusa will be – there will be an interview with her on WrestlingWithPopCulture.com later this week. And there's always plenty of other content. I'm going to get your Beyond Wrestling review posted in the next few days, Matt.
Sweet.
Anyway, enough rambling. We'll be back next week, and thanks for listening.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.